as we get older, it becomes very important to unwrite the stories that we have been telling ourselves since childhood. There's a new book called The Road Back to You, and it breaks new ground with the Enneagram, an ancient personality typing system, by revealing how each of us inhabits a broken story that runs counter to the larger story of divine grace and who we were created to be. My guest today is Ian Cron, and he draws on his training as a psychotherapist and his own personal experience, and he explains how you can rewrite self-sabotaging stories that you have been telling yourself about who you are. You can free yourself from the tyranny of unconscious childhood messages and overcome self-defeating patterns of behavior that prevent you from becoming your authentic self. With this powerful tool, Cron shows us how each type can shed their broken stories and harness their unique power within to become who we were truly meant to be, shedding all of the unhappiness that we have accumulated throughout our lives by trying to live out the wrong story. Filled with examples from people whose lives have been transformed for the better, Cron maps out a guide for using Enneagram wisdom to reauthor your life and experience deep inner transformation, healing, and happiness. Rewrite the story of you, and you will find true freedom in being exactly who you are. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Ian Morgan Cron is the best-selling author, psychotherapist, Enneagram teacher, Episcopal priest, and the host of the wildly popular podcast Typology, which has more than 19 million downloads. His books include The Enneagram Primer, Road Back to You, the novel Chasing Francis, and the spiritual memoir Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me. His newest book is The Story of You, an Enneagram journey to becoming your true self. Known for his transparency, humor, and depth of insight into the inner workings of the human's heart and mind, Ian uses the Enneagram personality typing system as a tool to help people cultivate self-awareness and find happiness. Ian is a popular speaker and business consultant for organizations like the Discovery Channel, Michael Hyatt Company, Warner Brothers Music, and Chick-fil-A. In addition, he shares his expertise on popular podcasts such as The Minimalists, John Acuff's All It Takes Is a Goal, Jen Hatmaker's For the Love, and many other. He and his wife, Anne, have three children and live in Nashville, Tennessee. Ian Cron, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay.
I'm so excited to chat about the Enneagram because just this past weekend, I had some colleagues over, and some of them have never heard of the Enneagram. And we sat down and took the tests and all of the things. And the person that was an Enneagram type 2, I was like, of course you're a type 2. The one that was a type 8, I was like, of course you're a type 8. The one that was a 5 was like, of course you're a 5. You study spreadsheets all day long. And so the Enneagram is... It's a remarkable personality profile. And in your new book, The Road Back to You, you take a look at this ancient personality typing system and kind of create something new out of it about how do we discover exactly who we are by using a simple personality test. So talk to us about what is the Enneagram and Are there truly only 9 types of people in the world?
Yeah, the Enneagram is, as you said, a personality typing system. It teaches there are 9 types or personality styles in the world, one of which we gravitate toward and adopt in childhood as a way to cope, to feel safe, to protect ourselves, and to navigate the new world of relationships in which we find ourselves. People ask me all the time, are there really only 9 personality types in the world? Well, according to the Enneagram, the answer is yes. What's important to know, however, is that within each of those types, there's an infinite variety of expressions of that type. So really, there are 9 types, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a wide, diverse range of expressions of each of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so what are the 9 types?
Well, there's ones who are called the improvers, 2s are called the helpers, 3s are called the performers, 4s are called the individualists, 5s the investigators, 6s the loyalists, 7s the enthusiasts, 8s the challengers, and 9s the peacemakers.
Yes, I love it. And so talk to us about like the correlation between Enneagram and the stories that we tell ourselves about our childhood.
Yeah. So in my new book, The Story of You, I speak about how these are not just personality types. The Enneagram reveals the story each of those types tells themselves about who they are and how they think the world works. And it's important to know the narrative of your life, the story that you live in, because the key to transformation is always story transformation. You have to change the story you tell yourself about who you are and who you tell others about who you are, or you're never really going to experience the kind of life transformation that you desire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely. So what are the types of stories? Like, how? Teach me, for example, how would a type 1 versus like a type 8 tell different, how would they interpret narratives differently?
Sure. So the broken story that the one tells themselves and others about who they are is predicated on this belief that the world only rewards good people and punishes bad people. These are people who tell themselves and others all the time that it's bad to make mistakes, right? These are people who feel a deep, deep unconscious motivation to perfect themselves, others, and the world, and to avoid fault and blame. Now, that story made sense to them as little people. It helped them survive in the world. But when one's unconsciously dragged that story into adulthood, it really starts to make a mess of their lives until they identify it and begin to deconstruct it and live according to a brand new story. Of course, you know, obviously, perfectionists who are adults who, you know, if they're not very healthy and self-aware, they're going to get themselves into trouble in the world.
Mm-hmm. And what would a type 8 say instead of that?
Yeah. So I'm going to guess, by the way, Lindsay, that you're either a type 3 or 8. Is that right?
I am an 8-wing 7, and 3 is my second highest. So yes, you are correct, sir. I wondered how long it would take you to see me as the challenger, because I very much resemble all the everything, the positives and the negatives.
Sure. And by the way, I figured that out a little bit. You know, when you know the Enneagram long enough, you begin to pick up on people's body language, their uh-huh. speaking style, the posters they have on the walls behind them, which I asked you about earlier, like, what did they say? And I was like, okay, there are the values, right? And so that's kind of the fun part about knowing the Enneagram is you can begin to use it in relationships in a really positive way. And by the way, that taught me how to relate to you for the next 30 minutes.
Yes, yes.
So you can imagine how powerful it can be in business, in family, in friendships. I'm going to talk to you a lot differently than I'm going to talk to an Enneagram 4.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? In fact, already I have started to speed up my speech and answer questions so much more succinctly because I know that you're innate and you don't want to mess around.
Uh-huh.
You want to get right to it, right?
Versus my friend that I was with this weekend, she, first time she tested, she was a 5. The second time she tested, she was a 1. And she is the kind of person, she's like, I have to know all the details. And I'm like, if you can't tell me the answer in 10 seconds or less, I'm done. You know, I'm done. And it's just a dip. But now I know that I have to take that time to give her the details, or else she is going to feel like she's lacking something.
Yeah, she's actually not going to be able to perform for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if she's working for you. Okay, so back to your original question. The broken stories that eights tell themselves is that we live in a dog-eat-dog world where the strong survive and the weak get taken advantage of. Somewhere in childhood, these little people picked this up and they said, okay, here's how I'm going to live in the world. I am going to assert strength and power and control over others in the environment in order to hide vulnerability and weakness from other people. Okay. Now, again, that story helped you as a little person, right? It helped you get your needs met, but it's based on internalized messages that are not particularly helpful sometimes. And you know that when you take that story and import it into adulthood, that if you're not very self-aware and done your work, right, that you're going to cause a lot of messes in the world. And that's true for all 9 types, right? So we want to find out what's the story that your type tells. Then we want to ask ourselves, do I really want to live by that story's, you know, kind of messages and beliefs? Or do I want to rewrite a new story in adulthood that better reflects my values and who I want to be in the world?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of my friends taught me that, you know, when type eights are at their worst, we become very combative. We're really hard to work with. As it was put to me in my early 20s, I was perceived and was given feedback after a job interview that they found me to be rigid and inflexible. And that is very much what, you know, that's what you're saying. I've got to control everything. I've got to control my environment. And as I discussed with Stephen Covey on the podcast, the days of command and control are done. We can't command and control people to get them to do what we want to. We simply have to trust people and inspire them. And, you know, when I really take it to heart, like if I'm at my best, I become more peaceful. I try to embrace the 9, even though when I took the Enneagram test for the first time, I got 0 peacemaker points. None.
Well, when you would want to shoot for being a little bit more like a healthy 2, the helper, when you've done your work, which is somebody who is more helper service oriented, you would be someone who is far more attuned to the feelings of others rather than sometimes, you know, steamrolling people and, you know, trying to, work your way through the world with your elbows flying everywhere, you know, and also to begin to rewrite that story. You know, Lindsay, we don't necessarily, at least all the time, live in a dog eat dog universe. And, you know, part of the job in your human development would be to stop confusing vulnerability with weakness. Because vulnerability is number one. It's very important in leadership. It's obviously very important. It's the currency of relationship. Right? No vulnerability, no relationship. That's kind of just a fact of the universe.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Vulnerability is, what did you say? The vulnerability is the currency of relationships. Love that. So talk to us about each Enneagram's passion and virtue and why it's so important to reframe the way that we think about passion and virtue.
Sure. Well, you know, when we use the word passion in Enneagram work, every type has a passion. And think of that as a very, very powerful, unconscious, motivating force in a person's life. And it is not your friend, okay? It's not your friend. So, for example, let's take a type we haven't spoken about yet. Let's talk about sixes. I love sixes, the loyalists, right? Well, the unconscious passion in the life of a six is fear. Now, fear is always buzzing around in the life of a six, right? Like it's like you could feel it humming underneath the surface. And so that's why these people tend to be worst case scenario thinkers, always scanning the horizon, looking for potential threats, and mentally rehearsing what they're going to do when catastrophe strikes. Okay. Now, the virtue of the six that they want to start to aim for is faith, right? And now I'm not espousing any particular religious tradition when I say that. I think let's talk about it in terms of spirituality, not religion. That would be this belief that there is some higher power in the universe that has my back, that you know, I think for sixes, I have a friend of mine who's a six. He says, I suffer from pre-traumatic stress disorder. and so always thinking, and he said, I've just had to develop this virtue of faith that reminds me every day that, you know what, it's going to be all right. You know, he has a little quote on his wall that from a, I don't know, 14th century saint that says, all shall be well, all shall be well, all manner of things shall be well. So for each type, we want to, and this is part of the rewriting of the story, we want to move from living under the tyranny of our passion and consciously working toward developing our particular type's virtue.
Yes. Okay. And so, I mean, I'd love to go through and just chat about each of those because, you know, our listeners are going to have all these nine types and, you know, to know that we're going from really from fear to trust in a type six is super valuable. But run us through the nine types if you can.
Sure. Well, so for ones, the passion is anger, and that comes out mostly as resentment. And what ones resent is that not everybody else is as zealously concerned with perfecting everything in the world around them, correcting, ordering everything in the world around them as they are. And so there's this kind of feeling like, why do I have to do my job and pick up for the slackers around me? You know what I'm saying? And yes. So there's this kind of impatience and sometimes if they're not very helpful, this kind of self-righteous indignation that comes off to others as being very judgmental and critical. You know people like this, right? I always talk about the dishwasher test, which is just fill a dishwasher, load a dishwasher in front of another person. And if they come over and kind of tisk and then unload it and then reload it while saying something like, why can't anybody do things right the first time? You might have an improver on your hands, right? What they want to move to is the virtue of serenity. And serenity is, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. They just have to make peace with the fact that they live in a perfectly imperfect world. Okay. Mm-hmm. So twos, the helpers, they have to move from pride to humility. And the helper, you know, they have this broken story that says, I have to meet the needs of other people in order to win love and appreciation, right? And so for them, the problem for them is they think they know more about what you need than you do. And sometimes they'll jump right in and start to take care of your needs in a way that can feel smothering. And oftentimes it's not what you want. Right. And so that's pride. Right. It's like, I know better than you do about what you need. They have to move toward the humility that says, oh, you know what? I have to have enough humility to say, I don't have all the time, treasure, talent, and resources in the world to meet everybody's needs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go a little bit faster, though. It's a little hard to do because I have to explain it contextually. So threes, the performers, they believe that they have to succeed, appear successful, and win at all costs. They have to move from the passion of deceit to one of authenticity. It's deceit because oftentimes the three will adopt a mask that and then project it in order to win the admiration of others. And so it makes sense then that they have to move toward authentic selfhood. Fours, hello, I'm a four. The individualists, fours, the passion is envy. So common for fours. It's this feeling like you're always comparing yourself to others. You're always in the space of believing that others have something that you don't. And that kind of makes you a little bit of a misfit. And we have to move toward the virtue of equanimity, which is really about being able to withstand and cope with anything life throws at you at any given moment. Just be emotionally stable. Fives need to move from what we call avarice. Sometimes we think of it as greed, but it's sort of like that, but not entirely. They tend to be withholders of information, of knowledge, of feelings. They can come off as kind of aloof and emotionally distant. They have to move into a space of, let's call it generosity, where they move from having a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset, okay? And that would free them up to not withhold so much from the world around them, right? Not hoard as much as they can. Sixes, I already talked about. Sevens are called the enthusiasts, the joy bombs of the Enneagram. They have to move from this space of gluttony into a place of what we call sobriety. Gluttony because they are forever gorging themselves on adventures and exciting new things that they can do in order to fend off feelings of anxiety, of any feeling or thought pattern that brings them distress, right? They have to move towards sobriety, which is more like saying to stop getting drunk on experiences, you know what I mean? And just get in the moment, to become more focused, to be somebody that finishes what they start. Again, you know, I'm giving you such a thumbnail of each of these for the sake of time. Eights, oh man, lust. You guys have a lust for life. And that lust isn't necessarily sexual in nature. It's more like this desire to seek constant, immediate engagement with other people and the world, and the energy can be overwhelming to other people, right? And you have to move toward innocence, which is a funny one. The virtue of innocence has to do with, you know, recovering that place in childhood where you just trusted that you were safe. It's okay. It's okay. You can be vulnerable. You don't have to keep defending yourself against the world. Nines, they have to move from sloth to, we sometimes call it diligence or right action. Nines tend to be people that are loath to invest enough in themselves, you know, self-development. They can be a little slow moving, right? And we want to move nines toward right action, which is standing up for themselves and reclaiming their voice in the world.
I love it so much. And that lust to innocence, you know, it is so true that people who are type eights, we just are like, it's a challenge to be open and vulnerable. And it's one of the reasons that I do this show. And I mean, my goodness, last year in January, February, March, when my grandmother had just passed away, I mean, I would just openly sob as I was interviewing people because it was real. It was real. And I think I'm a little bit more forthcoming with my emotions than a lot of type eights, but it does take work, you know, it does take a lot of work. And I love that you use the word avarice. I don't know if this is a silly reference, but there's the Muppets movie where they do a Christmas carol. They sing a song about Jacob Marley, and they talk about how it's avarice and greed. And so, you know, you're thinking about that, like type fives, like if you are trying to be like Jacob Marley, don't do that. Like, learn to be generous. It's the entire story of A Christmas Carol, honestly, is how does Scrooge learn to stop hoarding and start giving more. Love that so much. Now, before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. Guess what? If you missed the Engineering Your Microbiome Summit last week, you have one final opportunity to view all of the videos for free this weekend only. Encore weekend is coming, and when you head to lindseyelmore.com/microbiome, you can instantly unlock more than 40 interviews with industry experts talking about everything from how the microbiome gets damaged in the first place to what tangible steps that we can take in our lives to engineer our microbiome for health. Don't delay. The Encore weekend is only this Saturday and Sunday, and it is the last opportunity for you to unlock all of the interviews for free. Head to lindseyelmore.com/microbiome to sign up today. And now, let's get back to the show. You break it down in the book about... You use the acronym SOAR, which is a step-by-step process for which people can rewrite all of these stories that we tell ourselves. Talk to us about what is SOAR. Can you walk through the four steps?
Sure. So let's talk about you for a second. Tell me about your early childhood and how you think you became an eight. What messages did you pick up? What mistaken beliefs, what experiences or traumas did you have that you think might have led you to become a person who needs to be in control, to assert power and strength over the world, and to hide vulnerability and weakness?
Well, I think the biggest trauma of my life was my parents' divorce when I was about 4 years old, and I felt very out of control. There wasn't conscious uncoupling, you know, back in the early 80s when I was a child. And so, you know, my parents never sat me down and said, hey, we still love you. We have just decided that we don't love each other enough to stay together. And so I immediately thought, well, it must be my fault. You know, it must be my fault that they're splitting up and I must have done something wrong. And so there was that piece of it. And then my mom very much bottles her emotions. And so she told me 15, 20 years later that there were times that she was so anticipatory of me and my brother going to sleep because she needed to cry. And I went and I was like, Mom, why didn't you just cry in front of us? Like, we could have cried together. Like, we were both grieving, both mourning, all of the things. And so that happened. I also went through a very traumatic move when I was in third grade. I loved my school. I loved my dance classes that I went to. But we moved to so that my mom could get more help from her parents. And, you know, and then in sixth grade, I'll never forget this ever. I was riding on the bus and, you know, children chant and sing to pass time. And people said, when I say Lindsay, you say know-it-all. And they chanted that. And that was really, really painful. And then a moment that changed my life forever happened to me when I was in 11th grade. I was the costume designer for a theatrical production that we were putting on. And I wasn't a great seamstress. And I was hemming pants and I didn't do it well. And one of the hems came out. And the performer who was having to wear these pants came to me and said, hey, this hem has ripped. I'm so sorry. It wasn't my fault. I promise you. And you could see that she was afraid of me. You could see that she was afraid to come and tell me these things. And in that moment, I instantly said, I'm not going to be this person anymore. I'm not going to be a scary person. I don't want people to be afraid to come to me and say, hey, I need your help. So that's a few examples.
Okay, so let's just go back to the earliest one. You told a very common eight story about a kid that, you know, felt vulnerable and in a dangerous world, and you had to take care of yourself, maybe even take care of mom a little bit, and also, you know, just be a hardened person in the world, right? That just doesn't want to be vulnerable and weak. Now, that was the first step of SOAR. You need to see the story, and we just saw your story. It's really important that you know, how did I adopt this story of the eight? Then you want to own the story. That's the O. Own means you want to take a look about what has this cost me? Like, what has this story, living by this story's messages, cost me in life? Maybe it's cost you relationships. Maybe it's, you know, list goes on and on. You need to also own that which is best about who you are, right? But you, most of all, you really have to look at, man, do I want to continue to live this story? And you can't do that until you own it. Oh, A is awaken, right? Awaken is like, well, you actually saw a moment of it, you know, but it's a little bit more of an involved process in the book. You know, when you saw that that person responded to you that way, and you're like, essentially what you did is a little bit of what we talk about in the book, which is like, this story sucks. I do not want to live by this story anymore because look what it does to my relationships, right? And so we need to awaken too to those moments when our old story has taken hold of our life again. Then the final step is to rewrite. You now that you're armed with all this information and awareness, it's like, well, what's the story I want to inhabit today? What's the story I want to live right now? And so here's the Enneagram being used in a narrative sense, and it's really, really powerful. I've seen countless people begin to change their stories.
Oh, I love it so much. So in your story, in your book, you share a story about Donald Miller, and I am a huge fan of Donald Miller's work. I think he is an absolute genius at what he does. I tell everybody, if you would like to be better at sales and marketing, do everything that Donald Miller says. And you talk about his own journey and how he stepped into a new story. And I'd love to hear that from you.
Sure. Well, Don's a dear friend. He just lives about 2 miles from me, and we see each other fairly often, he and Betsy. You know, Don, when I first met Don, he was 100 pounds heavier than he is now, maybe more, maybe 150 pounds heavier. And he was kind of a guy that was, he would say, kind of a self-pitying dude that, you know, kind of wasn't going anywhere with his life. And one day he just said to me, you know what, this story sucks. And the person I want to be in the new story can't weigh 150 more pounds than he should. You know what I mean? Like, he just said, this character should not be in my story. Right. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he took a bike trip to from the East Coast all the way out to California. He changed his diet. He did a bunch of things. He lost all this weight. He started a company, you know, on and on and on. He rewrote his story. Right. And that story has led him to the world in which he lives now. Right. Which is a whole lot different than the one I saw him in when we first met. So, he's just a wonderful example of somebody who actually went through the SOAR process. He saw the story, he owned it, he awakened to it, and then he rewrote it. And of course, Don is, you know, he and I go back, I think he's a three with a very strong four wing. And, you know, he just moved into a healthy three space, and he's a joy to be around.
Yeah, he's so much fun on social media, and he genuinely seems like a great boss, a guy you want to work around that truly trusts his people and inspires them to do really great work. And so what can we learn about God through the Enneagram? And if you had to say what Enneagram number Jesus was, what would you say?
Boy, you're not the first person to ask me that question. And the other question, I mean, for a long time, the two questions I always got at every gathering was, what number is Jesus and what number is Donald Trump? Those were the two questions I got more than any others. Very, very funny. So, you know, if you're familiar with the Enneagram, and you know, there's a diagram that comes with it. And in the middle of that diagram, there's this big white open field, right? This big blank space in the middle. And of course, it's surrounded by all nine types. And what I tell people is I think, frankly, that Jesus doesn't have a number, that actually he's in the dead center of the Enneagram. And what his type is, well, Jesus embodies the best of all nine types. He is an improver. He is a helper. He is an achiever. He is an, you know what I'm saying? In other words, he's all of these types. And at any given moment, he can draw on the resources of each of those types and employ them, depending on what the moment demands, right? I think there's a lesson for us to learn in that, to let go of the old story of our particular type and try to migrate toward the middle of the Enneagram so that we have the ability to use and tap into the strengths of all nine of those stories.
I love it so much. And you know, it really does go, you know, if you are a Christian and believe that Jesus Christ is God incarnate walking on earth, then of course it's all of them, you know, because if you believe that God created the world and created these different personalities, that has a shadow side and a light side, of course you can see that God and Jesus would be emblematic of the serenity, the humility, the authenticity, generosity, sobriety, innocence, diligence, all of those things. And so talk about how the brain has to adapt and change in order to rewrite these narratives.
Well, it's a great question, because these narratives have been with us so long that they're kind of grooved into the neural pathways. You know what I mean? Like it's not easy to shake these stories. It has to be very, very conscious work. But we know from, you know, neuroscience that these neural pathways of ours are capable of change. We call it neuroplasticity. And so the good news is you're not stuck with the story. Your story can change. It's malleable. There was a time in neuroscience where we believed that adults in particular couldn't do this kind of work, but thankfully we now know they can.
The brain always changes itself. We have talked extensively with Dr. Michael Mrzenich about how the brain can change itself. And there's lots of shows, listeners. I'll put it in the show notes because I'm not doing well at prattling them off the top of my head. Give us some examples of, you know, we've talked about Dawn, but, you know, how do successful individuals change these narratives? Give us a couple of examples that we might be able to lean on.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'm not always sure that leaders who are unaware of the Enneagram and of the work that it gives us. I mean, certainly people do change the narratives, right, of their lives, but they don't always do it very efficiently. And so the thing I love about the story of you is it gives you a very efficient path. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you know, I could give you examples of people who grew up in crime-ridden streets and developed and, you know, found their way, wrote a new story for themselves in adulthood, right, as they moved away from it. I can tell you stories of people like yourself who faced difficulties in childhood and you know, made good on them in a new way. Maybe the best example, though, is one that Don loves, too, which is Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, was a prisoner in Auschwitz, and amazing, his ability to rewrite the story of what he experienced in such a way that he turned it into a tool, a philosophy that has helped countless people who've been through terrible situations to leverage them into something beautiful and good. So there's actually a pretty classic story of somebody who changed the narrative.
I love that. I mean, that brought tears to my eyes to think about taking something so, so powerfully negative and to turn it into such a positive. And I mean, there's lots of examples of, you know, I think of like Elie Wiesel's very similar kind of story, was imprisoned and turned it into something that is life affirming, all of the things. And so how do you think that knowing the Enneagram, which I love the fact that, you know, you acknowledge that this isn't the end all be all, but it can help us to grow as individuals. How do you think that understanding your type as well as the types of those around you, how does it impact marriages and businesses and finances and all of the things?
Yeah, well, it's incalculable, really. I can't tell you how many times at a workshop people come up to me and say, the Enneagram saved my marriage. The Enneagram healed my relationship with my child. The Enneagram saved my job. You know what I mean? Like, I've just heard it so many times. It's predictable. You know, Cornell University did a study of 72 high-performing leaders of companies from $50 million to $5 billion. And they wanted to find out, what is the single trait that accounts most best accounts for their success? And here's what the conclusion of the study said. The key predictor of success among leaders is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. That's the gift of the Enneagram, is self-awareness. It's other awareness, right? And so I would also, by extension, say, I believe a key predictor of success in parenting, in marriages, in friendships, at business, and all of these areas is self-awareness. And that's the big gift of the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. I remember I was listening to a podcast, maybe it was Mind Body Green or the Goop podcast, I can't recall, but they interviewed Shefali Tesfari, who is a parenting expert, and she said the reason that your children annoy you is because they're pushing on your ego, the things that you don't like in yourself that your children kind of put in your face, you don't want to see it. And having that moment of awareness of, my child is not acting up, they're just pushing on my ego, has been something that I have recognized over and over and over. And one thing that's been really important, so my life has been deeply impacted by the effects of alcoholism. And one of the best things that I've learned in my journey through Al-Anon is, don't attempt to regulate anybody else's behavior other than your own. And that is a super powerful lesson for someone who is a challenger. You know, you talk about how when you rewrite these stories, that they become a very beautiful part of it. Why do you encourage people to, you know, you say you're saying it's so critical to rewrite the story of your life so that you can find this beauty in it. What led you to choose those words to describe the power of rewriting your story?
Yeah, you know, someone once asked me, you know, what's your reason for being here? And I said, well, one of those reasons is to convince skeptical people that they are in fact beautiful. And because, you know, I don't think most people believe that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ask people all the time, are you your own best friend? And they look at me like I'm like, I just invented fire with that question. They're like, wait a minute, I've never even thought about that. You know what I mean? And so I do think that learning about our own beauty and embracing it in the world is like something that not only will bring us joy, but it's kind of an obligation we have, because when we really believe that, we move through the world with so much more emotional wisdom and kindness. We move through the world with so much more empathy and compassion. And we begin to live into what it is, you know, we were placed here for, right? Mm. Like, your beauty will tell you a lot about why you're here, the errand that God sent you here to run, right? Mm. And so, you know, I hope that when people read the story of you and they discover a new narrative, that what it gets them in touch with is their core original beauty, their essential self.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the Christine Kane Equip and Empower podcast. And she's always getting in my head because she's like, you know, you're not doing the right thing here on earth because you're some goody two shoes. You're doing the work to become a better and better and better and better person because it's what God wants for you. God wants you to live this rich, beautiful, abundant life where you have, you know, just blessings beyond your wildest imagination. And so, you know, you're not behaving because you think it's some like high badge of honor. You do it because you're striving to be more effective, to have more of the fruits of the Spirit, you know, be more loving, more joyful, more peaceful, more self-controlled, more all the things. And so, I love this so much. Listeners, go pick up a copy of The Story of You and Enneagram Journey to Becoming Your True Self, and be sure to go and pick up all of Ian's books, Chasing Francis and the spiritual memoir that he wrote, Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me. I love all of your work, Ian. So inspired by you. Listen and tune in to his podcast. It's called Typology. And if you would like the first chapter of Ian's book for free, head to lindsayelmore.com/thestoryofyou. Ian Cron, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay.
If you enjoyed the Engineering Your Microbiome Summit, you are in luck. On Thursday, October the 6th, I will be hosting a follow-up Ask Me Anything about the microbiome. Bring all of your questions that were left unanswered by the summit, and we will learn together how we engineer our microbiome closer towards health. Head to lindsayelmore.com/askmeanything to get signed up to come to the webinar today. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @LindsayElmoreShow and help us bring the pod to more people.